for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
Yeah, you're what?
Yeah, you're darn right. You're darn right, is what I have to say. Sorry, my headset was being a jerk. There it is. There it is. We're back in business. Nick Mandola, Ben Tsujimoto here on WBNY 91.3. Excited to bring you the Football Club of Buffalo show after a week off. Last Monday, we had FC Buffalo tryouts, the first quasi-open session. You're certainly allowed to come.
Did I make it?
No, you didn't make it. We cut you very early, before we started, actually. We had your picture at the door, Derek, so if you showed up, the police would have been called.
But, that explains it. All right.
Yeah. Well, that's why you ended up in jail.
Oh, man.
Making a murderer. No, I don't know if you've watched that on Netflix, but I'm on episode 6. It's pretty intense. We'll have Brendan Murphy on later, the head coach of FC Buffalo. He was obviously there and fairly impressed by a number of people at the tryouts, and he'll be there next Friday at Salem Sports Park, free if you want to come. We expect him sometime after 5:15, and we're excited about that. So we wanted to begin, though, with the story of the day is at the circus they call Real Madrid.
Mm.
Real Madrid, where Rafa Benitez, the former Liverpool and Napoli coach, was fired by Florentino Perez, who fires everyone. Just a bonkers situation. You can expect the unexpected at Real Madrid, Ben. By the way, hello.
Hey.
And I guess I was excited to talk about this because how do you even begin? I'll ask you to frame it for us.
I think the more interesting character in this is Zidane, without question. I think Benitez is, the writing's been on the wall for him for a while. I think ever since they lost in El Clasico Numero, whatever that one was,
sure.
the 4-0 game where Barca beat Real Madrid pretty soundly, I think they were just looking or thinking about how they wanted to make the transition to the next coach. In this case, it's Zidane. And I think Zidane is the most interesting figure because he has not had a high-profile coaching gig. I mean, I guess being Real Madrid's B team's coach is
sure.
Sort of illustrious, but I mean, he doesn't have a ton of experience. I think from Florentino Perez's standpoint, this is very good PR for him. Anytime you have one of the best footballers to ever play in the world taking over as your head coach, it puts a lot more pressure on Zidane, but Zidane also will be in the good graces for a long time. You know, it's going to be a long time before the Real supporters turn on him.
Kind of like a reverse Klopp. You know, you bring in a guy with a good personality and a good pedigree, although mm-hmm. Zidane's is a playing pedigree as opposed to Klopp, and you hope that the likability and the good memories and, wow, I know what this guy was, kind of translate for a while. I think it's very risky as well, but I also think it's... I hesitate to use this word because it's so negative, but I think it's endemic of where we are when you bring in a group of superstar footballers who are, exceptionally about the money. And we're seeing it a little bit at Chelsea. Soccer is going to become less about tactics at a certain point and more about massaging egos and personality.
You really, do you think that's what this is about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to make too many comparisons to Chelsea because Mourinho is a much better manager, in my opinion, than Benitez.
Okay.
What I'd rather make comparisons to is Eric Spoelstra in the Miami Heat.
Ooh. Or David Blatt.
Well, you're now seeing these guys kind of brought in who are going to be there to manage and not necessarily call the plays. We saw it a little bit with the Buffalo Bills yesterday with Mario Williams trying to take credit for the last play of the game by saying, yeah, there was a play called in, but we saw the adjustments and we changed things. I wonder if this sort of mentality that we've seen across the board from youth sports all the way up, where it's player first and take care of the people paying the money, and then to the next level, it's take care of the elite players mm-hmm. by making sure they stay with your team and that they're happy. Is that now finally reaching the professional standards?
And not to get away from like talking about soccer, because I know this show is obviously about that.
But it's sports, yeah.
Yes, and Golden State Warriors are a great example. You know,
sure.
Steve Kerr has been ill and has had a hard time, I think, with his hip, or has got fluid in his spine or something
that. Yeah.
He's been out for the entire year, and Luke Walton's taken control. And Walton's not a dumb dude, but he's not going to stand in the way of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And these guys now have basically the freedom, and they don't have a true authority figure over their heads. So, like, Luke Walton's not standing in the way of anybody.
Well, and Kerr is somewhat around the team, but even Kerr is an interesting point because these are not at the Zidane level of success. Mm-hmm. Obviously won some titles and was a very good distance shooter and game manager, so to speak. The Trent Dilfer of soccer. Yeah, that's a joke, obviously. But to me, with him, Zidane, you are seeing more and more guys who have been around this new culture of super entitled, super rich, super talented guys. And oddly enough, I don't think it's going to do much to change Real Madrid, who are 4 points off the top, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe if Barca won their game, they might be 5 points off the top. I'm totally guessing on that. But they're doing arguably fine. They tied Valencia at Valencia. They scored 10 goals a couple games ago. Mm-hmm. They won their Champions League group. They got bounced from the Copa del Rey because the administration didn't tell them they were using the wrong players. I mean, these are troubling things, and it does go to the top. I saw a statistic today that since Perez began his second spell in charge at Madrid, he had spent something like 800 million euros, has 4 league titles, and 1 Champions League title. That was largely through just players being players. Like, you never really felt that year that Madrid was, even under Ancelotti, who is a great, is maybe a perfect example of an older guy, though, who is really good at massaging egos and why he's tipped for every big-name job. I think at some point, Ben, are we going to end up talking about your tacticians, your Roberto Martinez's, your... maybe even it's funny to say with Brendan Rodgers, so I won't say that, but those guys versus those upper echelon. I mean, Hiddink is brought in there to get everybody to get along after Mourinho. Mm-hmm. Are we going to talk about guys who are upper echelon coaches in terms of you can manage a gigantic club and guys who can take middle coaches and bring them up? I don't know. It's interesting.
I think tactics are very important here, and tactics sort of go along with style as well, and I think that was largely Mourinho's demise, that and he had a hard time getting along with anybody. But
But
they also weren't playing a very attractive brand of soccer. They weren't scoring anymore. They were defending first. They were, like, if you look at the difference between Oscar when Mourinho was there and then the couple games since Hiddink has been there, like, Oscar has been an entirely different player. Like, you wouldn't even recognize him, you know. So this is
unleashed, so to
unleashed.
Speak.
Unleashed, and it's probably going to be the same way with Zidane. I mean, there's issues, or there were reported issues. I think there was the Mirror that was saying about how Benitez was stifling Cristiano Ronaldo,
which is hilarious.
Yeah, because I don't think anybody stifles Cristiano.
Pretty much scores a goal a game, anyways.
Yeah. And also, at the same time, it's also hard to say, oh, the fans have been disappointed in the style. Well, you scored 10 goals not long ago.
Sure,
you know?
And the fans booed, well, whistled. That's what they do in Madrid. It's not boos, it's whistles. Mm-hmm. They whistled at Madrid 2 games at Ronaldo, and Ronaldo actually kind of made a threat, like, don't do that again. Mm-hmm. And I don't have much against Ronaldo. I think he's a kind of a hilarious character in the sense that he's a great footballer and an incredible, industrious worker and student of the game, but also... I mean, basically, he's Access Hollywood. He talked about how he's not interested in getting into managing or anything football-related when he's done, but the only managing he wants to do is his brand. So kind of a next-level, new-era footballer. But Madrid, to me, is... Guys are going to keep getting fired because their team, as long as Iniesta is still basically a clock in the middle of the field... But even as he slows down and they bring in guys like Rakitic, et cetera, with 3 guys up top who are the best in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that Benitez's job? Is obviously to help stop Messi, Neymar, and Suarez. But no one has done that in a year and a half. And this year they did it largely without Messi for a couple months. So it's just interesting to me that Luis Enrique, let's see, last year, right? He's going to get fired in December. They win, was it a treble or a double? I can't remember. I think it was a treble. They win the domestic double and the Champions League last year. And all of a sudden, is he a genius? Or does he have the 3 best forwards in terms of a trio in the world?
Mm-hmm. It's pretty tight at the top of the La Liga table
Yeah, Atletico's top, right?
Atletico's top with 41 points. Barcelona, with a game in hand, has 39 points. Real, as you said, is four back of the leaders. And Villarreal, a team that I believe tied Real not that long ago.
And won their derby against Valencia, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, so Villarreal's in fourth place with 36 points. So it's still pretty tight. You know, there's only five points separate the top four. And it's not like Real is in Chelsea territory, you know, where they're like,
but what's interesting to talk, we'll get to the Premier League later, but I want you to benchmark this. If you see what you see with Chelsea just destroying a pretty good Crystal Palace team, and that was a 3-0. Mm-hmm. That was what the score indicated, and this team unleashed, and these guys who have been booed even when they scored moments into the first game, I'm starting to have that little bit of a notion that says I'm not ruling out Chelsea from making a top four run again, because the talent is just tremendous, especially if they find a guy that allows them to not play John Terry a lot. But we'll get into all of that later. To finish up on the La Liga point, we'll be speaking with Brendan Murphy, the head coach of FC Buffalo, in a couple minutes here. I don't make any... when we talk about La Liga, I have to admit that I support Barcelona. Not support them in the full-fledged I'm a supporter way, but if you made me pick between the two, I would pick Barcelona. I enjoy the way they play. I enjoy the way Real Madrid plays too, but there is something to the gulf in mentalities between two teams that arguably should be considered as near or as close, as similar to anyone in the world in terms of a massive group of talent. Like outside of Bayern Munich, it's those three to me. Mm-hmm. Even though Juventus made the final, even though PSG is pretty loaded, and even though the Premier League has some very, very good teams, to me it's Barca, Madrid, and everybody else. And that's got to be such a challenge, as much as I make fun of Florentino Perez. Such a challenge to know that you can be the second best team in the world, but if your rival's number one, you're a failure. I mean, it's whoever Steve Jobs' main competition was at Apple, right? I guess that's Microsoft, right? Mm-hmm. And Microsoft is still like, hey, we're raking in loads of dough, but we're not that guy.
Yeah, it's like Tom from MySpace.
it's just like Tom from MySpace.
Well, no, he went against Facebook eventually, and MySpace died shortly
eventually,
thereafter.
You know what? There's actually a very good comparison to
thank
be
you.
Made there.
Yeah, thank you.
Because Madrid won the first, by the way, something that bothers me about their 10 Champions League titles is the first, I think it was the first 20 years of the Champions League. It wasn't called that at the time. It was just the European Championships. Mm-hmm. It was only the teams that won their league. So it was actually a smaller tournament than right. the UEFA Cup. So Madrid kept winning their league, but Barca at the same time was playing fantastic in the European League. So I would love to see, as much as I tell you I support Barcelona, I'd like to see Atleti stick around a little bit more. I hope they don't get Costa back, but if they do, they'll be a dynamite side. There was talk of a Jackson Martinez and him swap because Martinez has not done well at Atleti since he came from Porto.
Atletico Madrid doesn't – if Benitez is criticized of not playing a very high-scoring or very fluid style. I mean, Real scored 47 goals this year. Atletico Madrid scored 25.
I know.
You know, so I mean, sometimes.
And they score a lot of plucky Diego Godin headers in the box. I feel like every time I watch them play, he scores on a header in the box. It's very interesting team. Griezmann. Is it Griezmann or Griezmann?
I thought it was Griezmann.
Griezmann. Well, now we're just getting ridiculous. De Bruyne. But yeah, I think that's a fun race. And I like that there are. I don't know. Maybe it's because the Premier League is so wide open from spots, geez, maybe 1 to 10 in a certain way that I'm kind of enjoying the three-dog fight there. Because Italy's kind of 1 through 6 right now. And Germany, again, is just 1 and everybody else. Mm-hmm. I think Dortmund is 6 points behind, much to my chagrin. So this is kind of a fun thing to watch where there are teams putting up 10 goals a game and 6 goals a game. And then Madrid just – Diego Simeone has to be the most – I know he's linked with open jobs, so I don't want to say underappreciated. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't get the love that your Mourinho's and your Enrique's get – Enrique gets.
Oh, it's Enrique and it's not Enrique?
I can't remember.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it's Enrique.
Yeah, it depends who you're talking to. The British podcast that I hear a lot of, the Football Ramble, and I love it, they constantly just straight up anglicize everything. So, I don't know. I love Simeone, and I would love. I think he would be a great fit for a club like Chelsea.
What do you like about him? Just because he's a former player, who's a hard-nosed guy, commands respect.
Part of that he cried at his wedding because he couldn't give his wife the World Cup that they didn't win when they weren't together. Like, there's just something offbeat about him. I love him running out onto the field as much as that. I love his tenacity. I can't tell you anything about his tactics or what he's doing technically, but the year they made that run all the way to the final a few years ago was, to me, a run that was made with not a lack of talent, but the teams they were beating, he was doing it. It had to be something he was doing. Even if it was just coaxing performances out of these other players, he did a great job in that.
It's funny, he's counting on some Chelsea retreads too along the way. I mean,
Torres is there.
Torres and Felipe Luis, who did not last long, very, very long.
Well, both of those guys went from Madrid to Chelsea back to Madrid.
Yeah.
Luis just for 1 year as well. So very, very interesting.
Sorry to interrupt. Atletico has several guys with one name. So if you're a soccer fan who's like, look, I really like guys who just go by one very simple, very simple name. Thiago, Gabby. Oliver.
Gabby Juan, Rodriguez.
Juan Fran. Coque.
Yes.
This is for the people out there, I'm not rattling this off the top of my head.
But he is a very, very good player.
He is.
A baller. Much the self-glossed Leotis McKelvin. I don't know if you saw that yesterday, just to dip back into the football pool.
No, but did you know Marcel Darius has a hammock in his living room?
No, well, I do now because I saw a picture of him and his broken foot.
And the dog that was licking his foot?
Well, how many living rooms does a guy like Marcel Darius have, though?
He should have several.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So maybe that's his hammock room. I think that's worth pointing out.
If I was Marcel Darius, I would have themed living rooms.
Okay, got an update through the I wanted to make a joke. We'll call it the Mess K text hotline or something. Murph is going to be calling in a few minutes. So
outstanding.
I think to make a nice transition over to, kind of what we're talking about. In the NPSL, which we'll be getting to in a moment when Coach Brendan Murphy from FC Buffalo calls, there are teams that you will play and you will know right off the bat that they have recruited in incredible ways, that they have a draw. Detroit's one of them. And so when you line up against these teams, you expect that top to bottom, there's going to be a great deal of talent there. Lansing, being in the neighborhood of Michigan State, Pittsburgh having Duquesne, Robert Morris, or Fort Pitt having Duquesne, Robert Morris, Pittsburgh, and there's a fourth Pittsburgh area D1 school that I think I'm leaving out, and LaSalle is around there as well. But there are teams that you can expect there to be talent on, and then there are teams like Erie that there is talent there, but you can expect, at least in recent history, in the John Melody era, that you were going to run up against a team that had scouted you four or five times beforehand. And even if you were coming in there with talent, there was going to be a mystique about that club. And I think you kind of see that a little bit with Madrid, Atletico Madrid, that no one's going to take them lightly anymore. And there is now a certain bit of fear from those lower teams when they play them. And you have to kind of earn that. So I think there's a comparison there. To be sure.
Has Atletico, off the top of your head, have they ever won La Liga?
Yes. Yes. Off the top of my head, yes.
Okay.
But not
in... Not recently.
Not
right.
recently.
Okay.
Valencia has won it more recently than... I want to say... Well, I could be confusing Valencia and Villarreal. Mm. But a V team was the last team not named Barcelona or Madrid.
See, I think that's what it's going to take then for people to really take Atletico Madrid seriously. I know they had the Champions League run, but I mean, definitely winning La Liga and knocking off both Barcelona and Real, I think would be the only time when they're on that same level. Right now,
it would be absolutely massive. Champions, pulling it up here. We are, Bilbao was the, by the way, won four of the first eight, but that was back in the 20s and 30s. Atletico, of course, we're not talking about the 2013-14 run, besides them. It's been Barcelona, Atletico, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Barcelona, 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 Real Madrid, Barcelona, Barcelona, Valencia, Real Madrid, Valencia, Real Madrid. And how about this? 99-2000 Deportivo La Coruña, the La Liga champions. So some lean times there for, man, I guarantee you, well, I don't guarantee you, I would guess that everybody was fired from Barcelona and Real Madrid that year. Just Florentino Perez or whoever was in charge looking and being like, Deportivo La Coruña, huh? That's cool.
I don't think you need any more of a rationale than that to let somebody go.
Don't know what to tell you. That's cool.
I think that's why those leagues, you know, there's not, when I say those leagues, I mean basically Spain and France. The reason they just don't get the attention that the EPL does is because there's no parity.
On a week-to-week basis, you can't count on seeing a good game.
Yeah, and that still bothers me. So I'd love to see, I don't know if something like the TV contracts that you're seeing with the EPL will ever happen with La Liga. But no. I'd love to see it just because it would be more interesting to watch.
Speaking of big money TV contracts, we welcome in National Premier Soccer League head coach Brendan Murphy of FC Buffalo in the least smooth transition of all time. Murph, how you doing today?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing really well. Thought we'd ask you right off the bat. We know you got a tryout coming up on Friday. We've read online that there are some it's going to be a pretty deep and competitive tryout. But tell us a little bit about Monday and some of the locals that came out and, you know, top to bottom, how you felt about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great time. We enjoyed having all the local players come out. It was definitely, I would say overall, it was pretty solid talent. There were some players that we wanted to sign right off the bat after seeing them play once. And then there were some guys that we really wanted to see play again. And so we invited a bunch of them back to come to the second tryout, which I think you mentioned as well that it's going to be even more competition and even probably higher level players. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the second tryout and try to see how these guys stack up with some of the new players that we're bringing in, and it should be really fun.
Murph, as you head into year four, I believe, you've seen a bunch of tryouts here for FC Buffalo in the past, and you sort of see a cross-section of the local talent, guys who are, you know, playing in various parts of the area and various levels in the area, and you sort of get to see them all come together and compete against each other. How have you seen that talent and the people who've shown up to tryouts, how have you seen the overall caliber of play change in the 4 years? Has it been noticeable? Has it kind of been hit or miss year by year? Is there any kind of trend you've seen?
I mean, I would definitely say that the talent overall that has come to the tryouts and that has expressed an interest and wanted to play for FC Buffalo has gotten better. The local talent has definitely increased. I think there's a deeper pool of talent. The first year, obviously, it was my first year as coach, so there was a few guys that really stood out that I didn't know anything about, like such as Ian Mort, who ended up making a big impact on our team and playing a lot of minutes and has been a member of the squad for years. But this year, you know, there was probably the most depth that we've seen at a local tryout. From top to bottom, it was pretty competitive, and there's a lot of players that we're really looking at that might be able to help us. And so that's a great thing, I think.
When you have that interest, when you have, I think it was 34-ish players, so somewhere in the mid-30s, is it difficult to run a tryout like that in a pretty condensed two-hour span, having to evaluate all these different people? And in some cases, you know, you may not even know who they are until, I don't know, maybe one player makes a good play, and then you have to keep all that straight in your head, and then you break them into various things. But how much evaluation can you really do in that span of 2 hours?
It's very difficult. Yes, it's very difficult. That's why having two sessions is helpful. So now hopefully we've got a handle or we've got an idea of where some of the guys in the first tryout ranked. And then, you know, as we go, we kind of, I kind of like that guy. Where's he from? What's he been doing? You know, just to get a little bit more information and more of a background on him. And then so it kind of evolves over the course of the tryout. You get to know more about the players, and you call them over. Hey, what's your situation? Where are you planning to be this summer? Are you willing to drive? Do you need housing and stuff like that? Some of it just evolves as the tryout goes along. But that's why I think having two sessions and potentially even a third is good, because we get a handle on some of these guys from the first tryout. We get a second look at them. Was it a fluke, or was it really that's just how they play? And then, or did someone have a maybe not a great performance in the first one and they really stand out? in the second one. So I think it helps having those two. But yes, like you said, it's very difficult, especially some of the guys not knowing any of them or not knowing anything about them and just walking in cold. That's tough. And you want to give everyone a fair shot too, because I realize that for some of these guys, this is their shot. So I want to make sure I give a fair evaluation and really try to dig deep and look at as a player and could they help us.
You know, going back to last Monday, maybe not as much as in years past, but how much does it help you as a coach when you do have guys out there like Chris Walter, like Ian Mort? In years past, we've had so many guys who come back and they've been on the team, and now you can, instead of having a group of 35 guys, you've got at least four guys there who have played in the league who you can kind of see how these players are flowing with them. It has to help being in year four and knowing so much about the league and being one of the longstanding coaches in the league.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know what we're looking for, so we have a vision for the type of player that will be successful within our system and within the league, and we have an idea of now being 4 years deep. We've obviously developed a recruiting pool of players that we've been targeting and going after from all over the place, either local guys that are playing elsewhere and coming home for the summer, or guys that are maybe, hopefully we're bringing in a few really top quality candidates that are going to live here for the summer. And we know the level they're at, and so we're basically trying to compare the guys in the tryout, not just with each other, as I tried to explain to them, which is very difficult for players to understand, that you're not just competing with the guys that are here. You're competing with a list of about 54 other players that we've been targeting since August. And so knowing what we're looking for helps. But then, yeah, like you said, when I saw Abdi Sabtow blow by Chris Walter, that helps to realize that, okay, hey, this guy, he could be the real, you know, he could help us. If he can do that to Chris Walter, who's been a very successful player for us for 5 years, then I think he could help us.
Murph, looking through, I just think, and I know obviously being behind the scenes, I know a bit about this, but can you, with Bobby Roach, your assistant coach, and yourself, this has to have been, and I know it has been, the most exhaustive recruiting process ever, coming on the verge of making the playoffs last year and kind of a commitment to finding the best possible players you can get there. Can you just talk about the recruiting process and how much work you guys have done in the off season?
I would say that each year we have done more work because we have realized how much more work there is to do and how much more work there can be done to make sure we get the best players. The talent of the league and especially our conference has gotten so much better every year that I feel behind the eight ball if we're not doing all the work we're doing. So, I mean, since August, really since the season ended, and I would say probably even during the season and back to last year, we've been developing these connections with certain coaches that we've hopefully given their players a good experience and sent them back to their college teams a better player, or having a good season after they come play for us, and that helps us with our recruiting for the future. And so that helps, and then, you know, getting, obviously the club has been around now, and it's a well-established club, and that helps with being able to say, hey, this has been going on for 5 years, here's the numbers, here's the fans that have been coming to the games, here's, you know, we've had some housing struggles, but now we've got it sorted out. We've got a great living situation for these guys, so... developing those connections really helps with the interest level of coaches and players to know that we're a well-established organization. But it's been watching games online and going to as many local games as possible and following up on the coaches that do contact us about players, wanting to push their players on us. In the past, we've maybe said, yeah, sure, let's take a chance on it. But we're at the point now where we're not just taking chances on guys. We want to bring in guys that we've fully vetted and we know, and we have a clear history of their background, and you could tell that they're going to really be something special for us. And those are the guys that we want to bring in. So, yes, we've put a lot more work into it this year. We've talked to and communicated with probably, I don't know if I want to say double, but close to double the amount of players that we ever have in the past in a year. And we're only here in January, so I feel like we have a great shot to be to have the most talent we've ever had, and that's the goal every year, is to continuously increase our talent and make a run at the championship.
Murph, you mentioned Abdi Sabto as one of the guys who stood out to you during that first tryout. And I guess this is a two-part question, part one being, who are some of the other players who jumped out at you during that tryout? And then heading into this Friday's tryout, who are maybe a handful of players, or maybe even two or three, how many you want to name, who you're looking forward to seeing?
Yeah, I love Abdi. I've been lucky to have the opportunity to coach him with Black Rush for the last few years as well, so I kind of knew, hey, this is one to look at going in. And then, like I said, when I saw how he did against Chris Walter, Ian Mort, and some of the other guys that were there at the tryout, Isaiah Barrett, it was clear that, okay, he is ready for this level. And at least, you know, I don't know how many minutes he's going to play or is he going to really make a huge impact, but you can tell he's right there on the cusp. So if it's not this year, then hopefully it's next year and it's things for the future. And that's a similar situation for, you know, a guy like Troy Brady, that we really like him. He's the player of the year. He's got a lot of accolades, and, you know, we knew about him. We've seen him play from a distance, but let's see how he does against the big boys. And he came out and really showed well. We recognize that he's a part of the academy program, and that's his number one commitment right now. But hopefully he comes out and trains with us when his academy stuff is done, and then he's a prospect for the future. He's going to be around. So we'd love to see him come back. And Isaiah Barrett, who we had already signed last year and we loved, tore his ACL in the spring last year, so never got to even come to a training session with us. But curious about how he was going to look coming off that injury, and I thought he looked very good and strong and steady. So you know, those are some of the guys that stood out to me. Noah Mehta from Duquesne was a pleasant surprise. Didn't really know much about him, but he's a very simple player that, you know, I could see him helping us too. And then as far as guys that are coming to this tryout, we've got three from Robert Morris that we know about that are going to be there. They were all very curious. They're probably, you know, they have a pretty good history and pretty good background. There's a kid coming in, Austin Diltz. I believe he's coming from the Connecticut area. He's a St. Lawrence freshman who is not necessarily – I didn't expect him to be there, but he's, you know, it's that much of a commitment to him that he wants to show us that he can hang with everybody. So he's going to be there. I'm excited to see how he does against some of the local guys and just see who else comes out.
Murph, would be remiss if we didn't finish off this interview by mentioning, obviously, in 2014, you were the AMCC Coach of the Year over at DeUville. You got a pretty brand new field over there that we're well acquainted with. And I know that, similarly to FC Buffalo, you are in the midst of your probably the hardest working you've ever done recruiting at that level, too. So tell me what it's been like building that program. We talked with Mark Howlett about it on this show from Buff State. We've talked with Nick DeMarsh from Buff State. I know two guys you're very close with. You know, take us through the challenges of building a program in Buffalo right now.
Well, when I started at the UVA, we had 8 players on the roster, and that was the first day of preseason. So there were some major challenges. We had no field. We played at Riverside High School. We had to work around the football schedule and every other sport that wanted to be on that field. The field itself was 58 yards wide, so it wasn't really conducive to playing college soccer on that field. So coming from that season with 0 wins, scoring 4 goals all year, and then the next season to be able to make the playoffs was a pretty fun transition. Now, it gets harder after that. You know, like you can make a big jump in your first year, and I think it becomes more difficult from second year to third year, and that was the case with us, where, you know, guys get comfortable. There's just, you know, other teams realize that we're not just a pushover anymore. So,
and crazy injuries, right, Murph? I mean, you guys
had 6 concussions throughout the course of the year. They were all legitimate concussions. Guys had to sit out five games here, 3 games there, starters. So that hurt us, but, you know, I realized, as I said about NPSL, it's nothing, no replacement for recruiting. You just got to bring in more and better players. So that was a kick in my butt to make sure I get out there and put as much work as I've ever put into recruiting, and that's what I've been doing. So I feel good. I feel cautiously optimistic about the recruiting class that we're going to bring in 2016. You never know until they're on campus and, you know, playing in the first game. But at this point, it's probably the best class that I've had as yet. So hopefully, you know, everything will work out and we'll lock everybody in and, you know, this will be our best year.
Brendan Murphy is the head coach at DUville. He is a staff coach. And are you head goalkeeper coach or just staff coach at Blackwatch now, Murph?
Oh, you know, I kind of do a little bit of everything over there.
Yeah, and
I am the only goalkeeper coach, so you could call me the director of goalkeeping, and
there you
I help
go.
Out with all of the boys' teams. So, yeah, it's really fun.
And ODP as well, the Olympic Development Program, and, of course, at DUville. Of course, Murph, we wish you great luck with all of them, but more with FC Buffalo than anything else. And can't wait to see you on Friday, and thanks for taking the time with us today.
No problem. Thank you, guys. Great show. Look forward to listening.
Thanks,
all
Murph.
Right. He's Brendan Murphy. Ben Tsujimoto's here as well. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll talk the Premier League. Jordan Morris, his future. And that just might about do it.
Yeah, probably.
All right. See you in a minute. Hopefully some good nuggets there for you FC Buffalo fans. Go to fcbuffalo.org// whichever you please. 2016 season tickets. That's what I'd like to hear from you guys later. I was thinking about at some point this week or next, if it's not 14 degrees, I'm going to announce, like, if you order your season ticket wherever you are right now in West New York, I will drive it to you.
Wow.
That's second class shipping.
Will you bring them dinner?
No. Too poor. What's your takeaway from the Murph talk, Ben? Anything before we get into the Premier League?
I think it was useful for some people who aren't quite as, I mean, this is going to sound like I'm tooting my own horn.
You are a self-horn tutor.
I'm a self-horn tutor, but I feel like I knew a lot of the things that he said, but that's only because I've asked him similar questions in the past.
Within the last week.
But he's also right in everything, you know, and it's interesting to see the progress in local soccer in Buffalo. And while I don't think there's been a very stark improvement in the caliber of players who show up, I do think there's more of a group of decent players who show up. So it's a little bit, I mean, it's not like we're suddenly having stars show up out of the blue, but...
No, but I think what you're seeing, Ben, is you're seeing more guys who would have assumed they could just make it by emailing us, you know, like, hey, I'm a D1 player. I know you need them. You're seeing those guys actually show up for practice. And Murph mentioned Austin Dillis, who's Murph always in his head. He loves St. Lawrence so much that I think he tries to downplay it.
Uh-huh.
The kid is a good, good soccer player. They were very good this year under Coach Toshak, who came from replaces Bob DeRocher, who had been there for years,
yeah, like
won a national championship.
Decades.
He moves up to be athletic director.
Oh, wow.
And Toshak, who was the Portland Timbers goalie coach, takes the job at St. Lawrence, and what do? They go to the tournament again.
Without
Rob Randall, was hurt for most of the year, and we're very hopeful that he'll be 100% healed up and back in Buffalo. But, yeah, I think what you're seeing is the first year of tryouts, okay, was barely even a trial. The first, not with Murphy, but when Coach Hesch was our tryout, it was basically a lot of the guys that were going to be on the team.
Yeah.
You know, UB guys, Canisius guys, Niagara guys. And it was a totally different animal under Coach K. With Murph, what I think you've seen less of is the kids who just don't have a prayer. And I hope that's because of the establishment of the club, because there's so many players who are very, very talented but don't quite realize what it's going to take. And so maybe in years past, it's not that we have, I think we have more, on a scale of 1 to 10, we have more 7s and 8s, and the lower end is now 4s, 5s, and 6s.
Yeah, I think an easier way to put it is, like, the median player is now
a 7.5 rather than
a 6.5 or something like that. And one thing that I've always thought has been cool about FC Buffalo tryouts is it's always been pretty diverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys had, I think, 3 or 4 players from the Yemeni community out there. You had a bunch of players from CSAT, one of the...
And Ali Muhammad from the Yemeni community played for us in a friendly game last year. And we've again, that's our goal. Guys like Hassan Sabtow, and there were some very good players. You know, Ali Shawoosh was there from Lackawanna. Mm-hmm. We've had very good players from Lackawanna. We want that representation on our team. And I think the challenge there, and I've talked to a lot of the guys in that community about it, Farah Salah and Saleh, I always get his name wrong, mm-hmm. And Nabil Saif, we've talked about this. It's very difficult for even a player from a Division I team who's 21 years old to show up on a team and have to fight for a starting lineup.
Yeah.
For someone who's the best player in his community to have to come out and fight to be on the 18, I mean, it takes incredible industry and humility, but I think the guys in that community do have that. It's just it's a challenge.
And the quality there, that was really good. You know, I mean, yeah. there's two Yemen teams in the top tier of the BDSL coming this year. FC Yemen won the Teal Cup this past year. You know, that's a community that's, I think you'll start to see more players coming.
The Detroit City of given the cage and all that, the Detroit City of the BDSL. And of course a really talented player, the ECC guy, always Yanni Guardado, and he's a very talented finisher as well. Let's move into the Premier League for the final bit of the show. There is a lot to like about this time of year, because as I wrote at NBC Sports, Pro Soccer Talk at NBCSports.com, this year, with the congested table and the importance of not being relegated because of the new TV deal, we may see a busier January window than ever. We saw Leicester buy, I can't remember his first name, Demarai Gray, I think is his name, from Birmingham City, who's an England U20 guy. Hmm. I mean, Leicester is buying instead of selling, at least to start this window.
And Bournemouth bought too, right?
Bournemouth, they're paying the loan on Iturbe from AS Roma.
Yes.
Arsenal bought FC Basel's Egyptian midfielder that I don't know how to say his name yet, because I haven't heard someone say it out loud. But he is going to probably get a chance to start as soon as he's in there because of the injury to Coquelin.
No one else is healthy. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're seeing that a lot. Chelsea has been linked with Teixeira for a long time. I'm open to his name being pronounced differently, but right now it's spelled almost exactly like the Yankees' first baseman.
I was going to say that's Mark Teixeira.
So I'm just rolling with that. Hmm. So yeah, very interesting times. Leicester has been shut out for the first time and the second time since we last did a show.
And Jamie Vardy's having groin surgery, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's minor. I think it's a few weeks. It's not a few months.
To me, it doesn't feel like any groin surgery can really be minor.
And yes, yeah.
As somebody who's torn his groin before, it does not feel minor.
If you are going under the knife in the groinal region, that seems unfortunate.
Yes.
We say that, of course, and women go through labor.
That's true. Like, yeah. That's fair enough.
There's that to be said.
Yeah.
So look, it is wide open right now. You could make an argument for anyone. In terms of that's the number I wanted to see. You've got six teams within 10 points of first place Arsenal, and an Arsenal team that is still in the Champions League. Same thing with Manchester City. Spurs in a Europa League campaign. I mean, really, if Manchester United were to get its act together. Very interesting thing today. I don't know if you saw Adidas. Adidas's CEO, Double H, because I can't remember what it is. It's like Eber Afner or something.
Mm.
And I apologize for that. I don't have the name in front of me. He came out and said, we're very happy with the relationship with Manchester United. We've sold far more jerseys than we thought we would, which is actually not a surprise. It's a surprise that they didn't think it would be an absurd number, because every Manchester United fan didn't have an Adidas jersey that wasn't less than 15, 20 years old. So, of course, they're going to want a piece of it. But he actually said, we don't necessarily like the style they've been playing.
Ooh.
And a little bit of that is, you wonder, how is that influenced? Because FIFA didn't start to make changes until the people with money started saying something. So I almost feel like Adidas saying something is in an interview in German, in a German magazine, but obviously it's going to make its way to our ears and our eyes. I feel like that's almost as damning as a group of Manchester United fans protesting at the stadium.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, sponsor money is absolutely
$750 million over 10 years, or million pounds over 10 years, Ben.
Though, doesn't United change sponsors? I mean, it's not like there's a shortage of people lining up to be a Manchester United sponsor.
But that is the richest deal in Premier League history until Yokohama came around. There's a way to, by the way, it's so much money, but Chevrolet and Yokohama are now, for as much as they were known worldwide, they are now linked. Mm-hmm. I think, man, not trying to say this as a jersey salesman, which I obviously am, but branding, very powerful to be on the front of a major team's uniform.
For sure.
You're a walking billboard.
That's the only reason why I know.
You can email me at nick@fcbuffalo.org if you're a local business.
I'm glad you could finish that plug there.
No problem, buddy.
Yep. No, that's the only reason why I know about companies like Aeon and Fiorelli. And,
sure. Yeah. Sure. So, yeah. Not Toyota. I was trying to think of the other jerseys I have, and UNICEF.
Yeah? No, I've heard of most of these.
Northern Rock, which actually made being a Newcastle fan more attractive because it just sounded like, man, that's pretty bad. You know what? Who is, with Leicester now in the mix again and not 4 points ahead of the table, who are you most attracted to in terms of title aspirations?
Ooh, it's got to be Arsenal, and I don't like to say that because I'm not
an Arsenal fan.
Not the biggest Arsenal fan, but especially if they are able to lure in a defensive midfielder, I don't think there's anybody who can contend with them. When they're healthy, they're very deep. They're very dynamic in the midfield.
How about the Flamini stat? He's never lost a game at the Emirates.
Wow.
54 games, and you don't even think about him.
Yeah, and I don't even really think he's an outstanding player.
He must be. He hasn't lost a game
at home.
He's
also one of 11 dudes on the field.
Yeah. What of it? I was going to say 54-0, but that's not the case. It's more like whatever. I am impressed by what they're doing.
Yeah.
I look down the list and I start to think you can make a case for a lot of teams, especially because at this point in the year, it's not that it's so early, like that's what you talk about. It's that there are still a lot of 6-point games to be played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost there are only a few teams that have finished their twin billing. And so it's super interesting. Spurs, to me, are an interesting conversation, Ben.
Okay.
Because I think they have the talent to compete with anyone on any given day. How much merit do you give to Ben There Done That? To whether it be Arsene Wenger, who has led a title charge with Arsenal, Manchester City, where the whole team has basically done the dance. How much would you put against a Tottenham because they haven't done it?
This year, I think maybe is different than other years.
It might be. And I think that's why the question is a little more interesting.
Yeah, I think the tradition of a club is, and the expectations put upon that club certainly encourage clubs to succeed at a certain level. But I don't think suddenly in game week 36, Tottenham's 3 points back from the first spot, and suddenly they're like, oh man, we've never been here. We're going to not play well.
But it's not that. I know that sounds ridiculous on the surface, and I appreciate that. But even, dare I say, because I know there's a lot of Liverpool players out there, fans out there, Steven Gerrard slipping and them more or less falling apart from that point. The Crystal Palace debacle, Dwight Gale scoring those goals. Was that a 6-3 game or something like that? And that is a team that has done some major things. Gerrard has won a European Cup. I do think that in those final weeks, when it's that tight, and we haven't seen it necessarily in a while. Will we ever see something as cool as that Manchester City final moment where they won it? But I mean, Chelsea won the league, but I think it was 12 or 13 points last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was guard of honor sleepwalk time.
Yeah, that's the goal this year, and I think, and we're setting ourselves up very well to see that really close race at the end. You know, just as you said, six teams within 10 points of first place, and that should be the goal, especially because it keeps waking up Saturdays and Sunday mornings to be interesting. You know, it loses its luster quite a bit, especially last year when Chelsea just stopped playing very entertaining soccer after it seemed a foregone conclusion that they were going to win the league. So I like to see the race, and I think it'll continue to be that way, and hopefully it's I would like to see one of the non-major teams at least get a Champions League spot or something like that.
I'm pulling for Jeff Cameron. I don't know if his red card was rescinded that he was hoping to get, but I like the idea of Stoke City. Mark Hughes is an English manager so he's going to get a lot of love for that, but who has done a really nice job there and has probably been, I heard on another podcast actually talking about how he's still branded by his failures at Manchester City. And that was a crazy time when they were just throwing money at everybody. So that's pretty interesting to me. I don't want to finish this show without talking about Jordan Morris. The story is that the United States men's national team forward, seven times capped with a goal, and Stanford Jr., who just won a national championship by being the best player in the championship game. Soccer by Ives reporting that he will forego his senior year, which is not a surprise. But what might be a surprise for you is he will be signing the richest homegrown contract in MLS history with the Seattle Sounders and not be trying his hand in Bundesliga, despite apparently six or seven teams being interested in bringing the 21-year-old aboard. Your thoughts, Ben?
My thoughts. I'm eager to give you my thoughts on this one. It is an absolute win for MLS.
Oh, it's huge for
MLS. It's an absolute loss for Jordan Morris.
Yes, I feel exactly the same. And so if you're looking for a big argument,
those are two hot takes right there. I think those are the hottest takes I've delivered on this show. Maybe,
steaming.
Maybe producer Derek can say something otherwise, but I think those are two pretty sizzling takes.
Well, the studio's on fire.
Yep, probably should evacuate. No, and I'm hesitant to say that it's an absolute loss for Jordan Morris because the caliber of play is improving slowly. He'll be training against very good teams, but
and on a very good team
and
a
very
good strike
team.
Core. Mm-hmm. He'll learn from Oba Martins if he doesn't leave. He'll learn from Clint Dempsey. There will be tricks he picks up,
and I think he'll still see a full complement of minutes, and he won't lose time.
He better.
Won't lose time on their behalf, I don't think.
He better have assurances that he's going to get a chance to compete for time.
For
sure. That he's not going to be brought. And you have to think he will be, but I want him in Germany. I want him anywhere else. Not anywhere else, but knowing the interest he would have. I want to see that kid play. And right now, because of what Klinsmann has given him in the German media, by calling him up in college, something that hasn't happened in the last 15 to 20 years, mm-hmm. His profiles, it can get higher. But you would actually, if you had to bet on it, you would bet on it getting lower a little bit because of how hot of a prospect he is right now.
I'm interested in seeing the stipulations in his contract, too. And I'm the first to admit that I don't know a ton about MLS contracts, especially when there's...
I don't blame you, by the way.
When there's so many different things coming out, like TAM now, you know.
Yeah,
like
targeted allocation money.
Yeah. Mm. All sorts of bizarre things there. But I wonder how long, say, hypothetically, that Jordan Morris sets the MLS on fire next year. Like, does he still feel beholden to the Sounders because he signed this rich deal and he becomes the face of MLS and things like that?
Because if he sets on a fire, you got to think they're going to be high-priced offers for him. What I'm interested in is, is there a chance he doesn't last a year? Is there a chance he signs this deal and then gets sold? And I'm dead serious. His father, which I learned today, is the chief medical director of the Sounders.
Oh, wow.
So did he feel like... I mean, his Sounders would always have his MLS rights because he was homegrown. But did he feel he owed them? I'd be interested to learn. Is there anything in MLS rules that say, I've signed a deal with Seattle. Why is there no press conference? It's because I'm being sold to Augsburg. You know, I'm being sold to Hoffenheim. I'd be really interested in that. I just want to see the guys compete at the highest level, and I love MLS. MLS people get mad at me when I say things like this. MLS is at a very good level. It's higher than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
It is not Germany. It is not England. I think an MLS team, how many countries in Europe, their top flight, of the ones we think of, France, Germany, England, would the best MLS team avoid just a straight-up relegation in a season?
It's impossible to say, right? It's impossible to say.
It's hard to say, but I would imagine they could do it in France.
Yeah.
I would imagine in Italy and perhaps in Spain, where there are very weak teams.
Yeah. They don't do it in England, I don't think.
And I don't think in Germany either.
In Germany?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think either. We've seen Alfredo Morales' team get promoted there. Aaron Johansson, Werder Bremen, is on the mix of a relegation fight this year. I think they might be in 16th. I don't like the move. I love it for Seattle. I love it for my summertime viewing habits.
But it's so good for the Pacific Northwest too. You know, you have Portland defending champions, and all of a sudden there's a potential for a new king of the Northwest. You know, young U.S. superstar comes out there tries to throw. The storylines are great. You know, you can already cast Caleb Porter as the villain, and
yeah, I already have. and I've really come to like Vancouver. They made a very interesting signing as well with Mudo. I think it's Mudo.
And they also finalized Teixeira today.
Or Kudo, excuse me. Yeah. I really like the looks of them. But I wonder also, this is just popping into my head, Copa America Centenario and the Olympics, is there a little bit of a wink-wink like, look, it's going to be better for me to be based in the Western Hemisphere this summer, but regardless of what our standing is, I'm gone in August.
That's a massive thing in women's soccer around here, just being...
Yeah.
Because there are greener pastures for women's soccer.
Australia's a huge place, and that's where they all are right now.
And Sweden's massive, too. Mm-hmm. You know, so the soccer and the living climate and just even the wages are way better there, but if you're not close to the national team, then you're maybe more on the outside. If it's a choice between you and somebody else, it's probably going to be the other person who's playing locally.
The Flash do not have a coach, but they do have the first South Korean in NWSL history.
Yeah, it's a landmark move. I thought they were going to be hiring a coach.
I think that might take some time.
Well, they should do it before the draft.
You would think.
Which is within, 10 days.
So. I have a feeling, and I don't know this directly, and I haven't talked to Aaron. I know he's been out of the country, but I have to think, given his status with the organization, that he'll still have some role.
Oh, he said he said he will. Yeah. It's going to be some role, but...
It won't be the coach.
It will not be the coach. That is absolutely true.
They'll be a team to watch this year. It's going to be very, very interesting. Well, this is maybe the third year that they'll end up having like 650 of the first 651 draft picks.
Is that right? It's like they're the New England Patriots.
Well, almost more like the Buffalo Sabres.
Or, even better. Yeah.
They didn't tank. They didn't lose on purpose.
True.
But they had, Crystal Dunn is now, not Crystal Dunn.
Sam Uys.
Sam Uys is now getting call-ups to the national team.
Jalen Hinkie.
Yes. Hinkle? I always thought it was Hinkle.
It's Hinkle, my eyes and my L's can be difficult.
The only thing I would say is I wish they would have somehow found a way to hang on to Adriana Franch.
Yeah,
because that would be the goalkeeper, a potential goalkeeper, defender, and midfielder from the team. So it's going to be an interesting year for the interesting year for the NWSL because there's going to be a lot of money in it this year.
Yeah, what do you think
about
those?
In Orlando.
What do you think about those Orlando kits? The Orlando Pride, I believe.
Don't like them.
Too purple.
No, we're getting into a sociological standpoint at this point, but I kind of feel like they went for. I think they kind of went for sales with the team name, and I don't think it was necessarily a real man. We want to really be here and proud. I think it was like, man, this will sell a bunch of jerseys.
Well, producer Derek has given us the...
Yeah, we got to go.
The A, yawn, and the B, let's flare up this up right now.
I got to go out to dinner. I'm going to a place, a new place in town called Pano's, and I'm really excited about it.
I've heard about that.
Pano's, yeah.
I think it's Egyptian. All right.
Yes.
Terrific. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back on next Monday. We can talk about the FC Buffalo tryout part 2 then.
And karate.